And right now, it is time to bring in none other than Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning. We rebroadcast during the week, during the noontime hour, also on the weekend. And we talk about FOOD. Good morning, Mr. Schwartz.
Good morning, and how are you?
Actually, very good. A beautiful morning, sunny, and summertime has come in. It looks like we're going to have summertime weather, at least for the rest of this week.
Yes, finally.
I know.
No more Connecticut rainforest.
Getting tired of wearing a turtleneck in the mornings to go out into 80-degree weather later on in the day.
Later, yeah. No, it's going to be gorgeous today.
Yeah.
So I'm cutting an English muffin the other morning, and I've got to say I rarely buy English muffins anymore. Once in a blue moon.
I used to buy Thomas's years ago.
Exactly. So that's it. I mean, is there any other muffin?
No, there really isn't. There really isn't.
By the way, I'm cutting the muffin with a fork because you have to fork them open.
Yep.
The whole point of an English muffin, not the whole point, but one of the beauties of an English muffin is that it has a lot of holes in the bread. And if you open it with a fork, you get more holes. Little, what do they call them in the commercials? Something in crevices. But they're right. And you toast it because it's like a half-baked bread, an English muffin. It's really related to the English crumpet. I'll get to that in a sec. And then you toast it. If you have a toaster oven, it's actually best toasted just on top. But over the years, I've gotten used to toasting the whole thing
in a
regular toaster. And then when you put the butter on, the butter melts and lands in all these little crevices, and it's so delicious. So I bought English muffins, and I'm opening it with the fork, and I realized there are several products that have remained unchanged for such a long time. We have to call them classic American foods, English muffins being one of them. They were created by a baker here in New York City. His name was Samuel Bath Thomas, and he emigrated from England in 1875, and he started selling these muffins, which he called English muffins, in about 1880. So he's not like original English New Yorker, but an immigrant. Anyway, they're actually a form of English crumpet, and what defines this is the kind of crumpets are often raised with baking powder, but baking powder is a 19th century invention. So originally, of course, crumpets were made with yeast, just like English muffins are. And it's a little, it's not a muffin at all, because a muffin to us is like a miniature cake. This is what Thomas Jefferson would have considered a muffin in the 19th century. And in old English cookbooks, you find very similar recipes. So we know that this is actually a crumpet. In 1880-something, these English muffins here in New York were an instant success. And by 1893... they were being used at the famous Delmonico's restaurant because the original Eggs Benedict recipe, which you can find in a book called The Epicure, written by Delmonico's chef, Charles Ranhofer, in that book he outlines the Eggs Benedict recipe and specifies an English muffin. Now, about the same time as English muffins were becoming popular, Child's restaurants, which were early a la carte restaurants, meaning you could go in and just order a dish or two dishes, and there was some faster foods because New York was already becoming a business center by the end of the 19th century. And one of their items was called butter cakes. Now, when I was writing my book, New York City Food, which is a history of New York as told through food, I found mentions of butter cakes. It took me forever to find out that butter cakes are really English muffins and a specialty of Child's restaurants. I don't think anybody in our audience, actually anybody, period, was alive to remember the butter cakes at Child's. I remember Child's, so I know that there are other people who remember Child's. And by the way, every once in a while, in a movie, in a Hollywood movie of the 30s or the 40s, if there's a scene in New York, you'll often see Child's as the in the background, because it was like, you know, it was the Empire State Building. Now, if you wanted to show New York, I'm not sure what iconic building or store you would show to say, oh, yeah, that's New York. But in those days, it was Child's Restaurant. So English muffins seemed to me to remain unchanged, even though the company has had a lot of product expansion. And you go to the supermarket now, and you find that English muffins come in I don't know how many different flavors, so to speak. I've tried the whole wheat English muffins. They're not the same thing.
Ah.
You know, I think I tried one that was sweetened with honey. Uh-huh. I don't want that. I want a plain old white English muffin. Now, interesting sidebar here. Years ago, when I was first diagnosed with diabetes, my doctor sent me to a nutritionist. I mean, she was a nice person, but I didn't like her attitude about food. So, and I didn't think she was knowledgeable enough to actually advise me. Except, my big dilemma and why I called her was, what do you eat for breakfast? So she said, well, you're allowed, you can have 24 grams of carbohydrate, and that's exactly the number in an English muffin. So you could have an English muffin, and instead of putting butter on it, goat cheese on it, because goat cheese is, fresh goat cheese, high moisture cheese, low calorie, high protein, it's all the things you need. So I said to her, but, you know, English muffins are just white bread. And I don't eat white bread, or at least I try not to eat white bread, or I don't eat white bread often, certainly not daily. I try to eat whole grain bread. Wouldn't it be better if I had some whole grain bread with the goat cheese? And she said, oh, you eat whole grain bread, as if I was some kind of weirdo. So I started eating the goat cheese, but I didn't eat it on English muffins, which indeed are 24 calories of basically nothing but carbohydrate. I don't know calories, I mean grams of carbohydrate. But they are delicious. And when I really want to treat myself, I do buy Thomas's English muffins. I've tried some of the other brands.
No, no.
You know, if you grew up with Thomas's, those other brands, which might, by the way, might be twice as expensive, just don't measure up.
They're too doughy. I'm telling you, there's nothing like a Thomas's English muffin.
Right.
Just is nothing.
That, I agree. And by the way, you really should split them open with a fork.
Yes.
Just go around the perimeter, sticking the fork in, and eventually you'll get around the whole perimeter, and the muffin will open. If you use a knife, you don't get as many of those crevices as you would like.
I love
that. So the other product, and by the way, I mean, this is, so how many years is this? 1880s? So this is a 140-year-old product. Not bad.
No, remember
another
old
product, also, by the way, invented in New York, is Hellman's mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Did you know it was created in New York? That has an interesting story, too. Richard Hellman was actually a German immigrant. By the way, even though Hellman is frequently a Jewish name, in this case it's with two N's, and he was not Jewish.
Yes.
And he came to New York from Germany in about 1903, and he opened a delicatessen on the Upper West Side. Actually, we know the address, 490 Columbus Avenue. One of these days I should go up to Columbus and see what's there now. And he prospered from the beginning because his wife was a great cook. And this was a kind of delicatessen that we used to call in New York a German delicatessen. They do not exist anymore. In fact, if you have a copy of my book, New York City Food, you're going to see a photograph of one of the last, if not the last, German delicatessen in New York. Schultz says, I was lucky, it was my neighborhood deli, and I was lucky enough to get a photograph of it literally weeks before it closed forever. Anyway, Richard Hellman's wife, first name we do not know, Mrs. Hellman, made great coleslaw, potato salad, egg salad, anything she could get her hands on, plus mayonnaise. And, of course, in those days, she made the mayonnaise. Well, it ends up, it was all about the mayonnaise, not about the eggs or the chicken or whatever was in the salad. And customers started coming in and asking Mr. Hellman if they could just buy the mayonnaise. And he did. He started selling it. If you remember, and I know you're old enough, Marshall, and Jill, that many years ago, they would in a deli, they would have these paper boats, I guess you'd call them.
Yeah. The little frilly things. Well, not frilly, but pleated. They were pleated paper things.
No, not those. No, not those.
Okay.
The ones that you might now get a lobster roll on in New England, except they were, a little wider. In any case, it doesn't matter. He started just scooping. He had this big, big jar of mayonnaise. Well, actually, two different mayonnaises. And one was his regular mayonnaise, and the other one he put a blue ribbon on it, and he called it the Blue Ribbon Mayonnaise. And he started selling the mayonnaise loose, so to speak, he'd just scoop it out and weigh it for you. So by 1912, his mayonnaise was so popular, he decided to produce it in commercially. And so this product, the Blue Ribbon Mayonnaise, as it used to be called, started in 1912. So that's 107 years, not bad.
And I don't think they've changed their tagline much. Bring out the Hellmans and bring out the best.
And bring out the... Well, it's interesting because on the West Coast...
Yeah, across the Mississippi.
Mayonnaise is, in fact, Hellman.
Exactly. And that was the first thing I learned when my mother decided that we should live in California. That and that Laura Scudder's potato chips were awful. But
I didn't know you lived in California.
Yeah, it was a mom thing. But anyway, it was...
Anyway, she immediately discovered that best mayonnaise was, in fact, Hellman.
Yep.
And so the original Hellman's plant was in Astoria, Queens. But then they built a larger plant, and now they have plants all over the place. So, Chicago, San Francisco, Tampa, Florida. So Hellman's is a relatively fresh product, even though it comes in jars on the supermarket shelf. And they have other products. They did product expansion, Hellman's, way before probably the expression product expansion was invented. Because their tartar sauce dates back to the 1920s. Anyway, it is Best Foods brand. So, listen, this is there's a really interesting end to the Richard Hellman story. When he was 50, by the time he was 50, he was extremely rich. His doctor told him he had 6 months to live. But he could live longer if he would retire from the business, very stressful, and move to the country for the fresh air. So he bought a property in the Catskills, not far from Woodstock, and he put his Park Avenue architect to work building a home, an enormous home. Has a 20-by-30-foot great room with a cathedral ceiling, a massive stone fireplace, and it's all surrounded by windows, which have a breathtaking panorama of the mountains and the river valley. And there's also a 40-foot covered dining porch with Adirondack-style tree trunk columns and railings. This place is now called Onteora Mountain House.
Oh, yeah.
He moved to the mountain house, entertained, lived it up, and also lived to be 94. So the doctor was very wrong. And the Onteora Mountain House used to be a bed and breakfast, and it's in Boiseville, New York. Almost anybody who had the cash could stay there. But now I just read that it's a wedding destination. They basically are a venue for weddings, and you can understand with all this big entertaining space and the panoramic views and many rooms to house your wedding guests. I'm going to take a trip up there this summer because I want to take a... I mean, I'm sure you can tour the place. And I did go there many, many years ago, intending to stay overnight, but I never did. So that's it, Hellman's Mayonnaise. And Thomas's English Muffin. And the third, by the way, Hellman's has a huge product expansion, and I have had and enjoyed the organic version of Hellman's. It's not the same thing. But if you're just gluing together eggs or tuna fish, it's like half the calories. And if you put in a little extra squirt of lemon juice or a few drops extra of vinegar, it's quite good. And then there are other Hellman's products. A million. By the way, there are a million English muffins, and the same thing with Hellman's. And now my other product that has remained unchanged for over 100 years is Heinz ketchup, which was created by the H.J. Well, it actually was not created by the H.J. Heinz company. It was created by Mr. Heinz, who was in business with somebody else at first. And it was first introduced in 1876. So that's been around a very, very long time. And their product expansion is super confusing, I think. Because besides, and if you go online, you can see all the products they have. The problem is there are nuances. So I got to say, about at least a year ago, Bob and I decided to try the organic Heinz ketchup, and we bought a bottle of regular classic Heinz ketchup and the organic and blind tasted it and decided that we liked the organic better. Now, the organic does not have high fructose corn syrup, which the classic does, but now Heinz has many products that do not have that sugar. They even have a no sugar added Heinz. I haven't tried any of these. I think Heinz is an extraordinarily reliable company, so I would guess that they're all pretty good. And my nephew, who has two small children, tells me about some of the parents at his kid's school have become really obsessed with the non-GMO food. They don't want everything non-GMO. I think it's a bit of nonsense—not nonsense, but an overreaction. But there is even non-GMO Heinz ketchup. You know, Heinz was bought by, I think, it's Kraft, not that many years ago, like maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And since Kraft, yeah, it's in 2015, so 3.5 years ago. It makes it the world's fifth largest food and beverage company.
Now, Arthur, can I ask you something?
Yeah.
This is how crazy I am. I love Heinz ketchup.
Yeah.
My brother, for some reason, only buys Hunt's ketchup. And you know what? It probably should taste the same.
It doesn't.
But it doesn't.
But it says like, no, it doesn't. That's the same as Coke and Pepsi or butter and margarine.
Why would it taste the same?
I don't know.
They want to distinguish themselves.
I just didn't like the name catsup. I always liked the name ketchup.
Catsup, right. Well, originally the word was closer to catsup than ketchup.
Right.
But who knows how it's... It's a Chinese word, by the way, and it's a Chinese concept. But tomato ketchup is totally Anglo. I'm not sure if it's English or... adaption or American adaption. By the way, so this is something you all may want to look at. Heinz, trying to be super hip, did a commercial with Ed Sheeran. Do you guys know who Ed Sheeran is?
Yes.
Oh, good. So I'm fond of Ed Sheeran. I like his music. He's a young British red-headed and red-bearded, famous for that. That's why I'm saying it. Not altogether good-looking, but very cute, English singer and songwriter. And so he apparently, well, everybody his age loves ketchup. I see kids eating nothing but French fries with ketchup for lunch. And as if you remember back, Ronald Reagan said that on the school lunch menu, ketchup counted as a vegetable. But anyway, Ed Sheeran loves ketchup so much, he did a Heinz ketchup commercial, which is online. I've never seen it on TV, but it's on the internet. And he doesn't sing or do anything like that. He just eats and ketchup. And they actually bottled a special edition Heinz ketchup called Edchip.
Oh, that's funny.
And instead of the usual, you know, by the way, Heinz did change its label a few years ago, maybe not so few, and they took the gherkin pickle off the logo and they substituted it with tomato. But on the Edchup bottle, which is a limited edition Heinz ketchup, I don't know how you purchase it. It's probably on eBay by now. The logo has been changed to a tomato. Remember, he's a redhead. That sort of looks like Ed Sheeran on a vine.
Ha, with a moppy head.
With glasses. I think he has his glasses on. So it's a very cute commercial.
It's funny you talk about ketchup. I'm so protective of Joe and I don't know if she remembers this. We went to a restaurant that brought in a new chef years ago and ordered a hamburger and french fries and Joe ordered tomato. And it came with homemade ketchup. And I actually said to the owner of the place, you know, there's only really ketchup. Homemade, it's not ketchup.
Like tomato,
you know,
sauce.
It doesn't taste the same. So but, please go back to just serving ketchup, please.
But here's the thing.
But you know, young chefs, maybe even ones who are not so young anymore, like to, you know, upscale or upgrade classic things. And then, of course, it's not like the classic thing anymore, so... why would you eat it?
Right, but you can't explain that prior. For some reason, they can't stop themselves. What is more compelling about that story, though, is that while I am perfectly happy to state my dissatisfaction from the beginning of an experience, let's just say, Marshall is he's just this absolute angel. He never complains.
And well, I complained about that.
So when... Yes,
I'm sure he did it in the most polite, soft way.
Yeah, but I did. I went to the owner of the business.
But so when Marshall actually gets around to having something that he believes is really important, such as the correct ketchup, and stating it, you know that it's a thing.
And they went back to offering two different types of ketchup.
Two kinds of ketchup.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and then ultimately probably ended up with proper ketchup.
So here's another classic product that has remained unchanged as far as I know, although there's been enormous brand expansion, and that's Oreos. Now, I never was a big fan of Oreos. I was more of a Malamar guy.
Ugh.
You don't like Malamars?
Ugh.
Well,
no.
I don't like marshmallows in general, but those I liked probably because
of the chocolate.
My father loved them. And also because, if you remember, Malamars are not sold in the summer. So you were deprived of them from now till, I don't know, the end of September.
That's actually a good marketing tool at this point.
Well, yeah, because by the time they come back on the market,
you're aching for them. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's like me with delicatessen on Passover. I always used to crave, my biggest cravings for a pastrami sandwich.
Corned
was
beef.
During Passover
corned
when there
beef.
Were no delicatessens open.
Exactly. Corned beef. Massman's in Buffalo, New York. Corned beef. That's all. That's all we want. All I ever wanted. No, you can't have it. But why?
Well, you could have the corned beef if you bought it prior to Passover and then did something with it. But
not in my house.
A sandwich at the deli, that's for sure. So Oreos, yeah, I don't even know what all the product expansion is on Oreos. I just know that there are a zillion million different Oreos these days, different colors, different flavors. Of course, Oreos have made their way into ice cream. What is it called? Cookie cream ice cream.
That's cookie dough ice cream, but Oreos is a different thing. But Oreos were like donuts to me as a kid. Nothing better than the only way you can get me to drink a big glass of cold milk was with a couple of Oreos or with a donut, and that's who I am today.
Well, for me, it wasn't Oreos at all, and for that matter, not Malamars either, but I would like and still do like a big piece of really good chocolate cake. Unfortunately, you have to pretty much bake it yourself these days. There's a bakery in Park Slope that does sell extraordinary chocolate cake. I don't swear by everything in this bakery. Lady Bird. And it's their so-called Brooklyn Blackout cake, which is really a great chocolate cake, although not totally the original. See, there's something that totally disappeared. The real Blackout cake made by Ebinger's.
Right.
Probably a version sold by Entenmann's.
I was just going to ask about Entenmann's, by the way.
Pardon me?
I was going to ask, have you tasted Entenmann's recently?
No. Have you?
No. And I was just thinking about chocolate
cake.
Well,
now that we've mentioned it, maybe I should.
Used to be an emergency. You'd grab an Entenmann's chocolate cake and...
Well, for Mr. Bob here, his emergency is Entenmann's butter loaf.
Yeah, that's good, too.
Pound cake.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, emergencies were crises and Entenmann's.
Yes, but sometimes the butter loaf is on drastic sale, like for a dollar or something, or $1.50, something very cheap. You're tempted to buy a bunch of them and put them in the freezer.
Right,
they do freeze.
I was just going to say,
well.
These freeze well.
Yes, they do freeze well, but they're also too dangerous to keep in the house.
For me,
you know, I could use a good serrated bladed bread knife, cut this frozen loaf.
You guys are way off base. I'm sorry. The best thing Entenmann's ever did for anybody who ever smoked marijuana and wanted something to eat was their chocolate chip cookies.
Ugh.
That used to be, I'm telling you, that was a standard fare.
Wait a minute. It was a New England company. I could buy them in the Northwest corner years ago. They made extraordinary chocolate chip cookies.
Those were great. And we're not talking about Famous Amos.
Prior to Famous Amos.
There were just phenomenal chocolate chip cookies that I used to buy decades ago in New York before they got... Oh,
no, these were only... I first learned about
not Mrs. Fields.
1970s going to Stratton Mountain in Vermont. We could only buy them in Vermont. But then when I moved to Cornwall, there was some place like maybe over the border in Massachusetts that I was able to get them. So the name of them, I don't know. I'm not sure they exist anymore either. But I'm not sure that they were any good.
Well,
you know, sometimes you go back to these things, even if they're unchanged, and you say, why did I like this?
Yeah, I know.
Well, that's true because I can't stand chewy chocolate chip cookies now. The only type of cookie I like really thin and crispy cookies now.
All right. Have you tried Tate's?
Oh, not recently, but yes, years ago, Tate's became the cookie of choice, no doubt about it.
Yeah, they're all over the place in my neighborhood, but I wait until they go on sale because they're overpriced.
Okay.
I mean, they really are. But they are an old-fashioned, you know, this is generational, guys. Young people want chewy cookies. Old people want crisp cookies.
Well, I'm happy to have both.
It changed with Mrs. Fields. She got the country into chewy, cakey cookies.
Yeah.
Remember Mrs. Fields?
Yeah, I'm the anti-Mrs. Fields. I like. I bet I always have.
But I'm telling you, Jill, it's a generational thing.
No. I do. I totally believe you. I'm in the middle. Well, anyway.
Crisp cookie.
Marshall's.
If you're ever I don't know if they're sold outside of Brooklyn, but there's a bakery in Red Hook called Baked, B-A-K-E-D, Baked. Became hugely successful because Martha Stewart had the baker on her show a few times. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Baked makes an extraordinary large-size chocolate chip cookie. They make a lot of extraordinary things, but the cookies are distributed around to other stores, so... Well, I don't think the cakes are.
All right. Well, we're out of time.
Oh, yeah. Well, I see that. So let's say not for good, just until next week.
All right.
Everybody have a great week. It's going to be beautiful.
All right, Arthur.
Thank you.
Bye.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven here on Robin Hood Radio. And you'll find him, of course, on demand, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, and on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.